Warning, do not listen to this podcast if hearing about freedom and liberty is not legal for you in your community. And if so, you should immediately move to a hipper community.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Podcast, where Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati cover the punk rockinist, hip-hopinist current events, as well as timeless universal truths about life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, because there's no such thing as half-free. The Freedom Fiends Podcast, available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Welcome to the Freedom Fiends Distance Learning Anarchy Series with Freedom Fiends Michael W. Dean.
Broadcasting from my windowless bunker.
And Nima Vedati.
Go, go, Freedom Fiends!
One, two, three, four, a gun for every one.
One, two, three, four, a gun for every whore.
Nima V, peace on earth, and a gun for every child. A gun for everyone, a gun for everyone. Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. Yes, a gun for everyone.
What, a gun for everyone?
Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. A Glock for every jock, Mosin-a got to rock the block. A firearm for every mom, an AK for every gay, a gap for every girl, a sink for every kid. We need to arm the world, except for government.
I wish kids could learn it from Bonnie. To defend yourself, you don't need no army. Cops, drone signs, or Barack Obama. Nah, what makes us equal is a firearm. See, a no-gun zone is a psychopath's dream. Turning easy targets for his high-capacity magazine. But don't blame the thing, blame the fucking person. And the no-defense dictums, turning innocent children into victims. Fuck that, I say the problem is the system, the status quo. The state is etiquette without the bullshit. There be no massacre in Connecticut. The defender slug instead would slip into the attacker. The evil dream shattered, just like due to the fact that anyone can have a gap. A gun is power, so why limit its dispersal? Fuck the ivory tower, the mindset needs reversal.
A gun for everyone, a gun for everyone. Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. Yes, a gun for everyone.
What, a gun for everyone?
Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. A Glock for every jock, Mosin Nagant to rock the block. A firearm for every mom, an AK for every gay, a gap for every girl, a sink for every kid. We need to arm the world, except for government.
Presidents pretend to cry when some kids die. Fake tears, that's that shit I don't buy. Why? They some liars, liars. They blow brown kids to bits. Hellfire, fire. Keep a heater by my side when I ride. Ain't finna be the victim of a homicide. I mean a simmy, not a hemi. A Christmas carol. Give a gun to Tiny Timmy instead of gay apparel. So this Christmas, let's be more like the Swiss Miss and realize a home shouldn't be left defenseless. The good kids need at least the same weapons as the bad seeds, cause the beasts always have teeth. You know what? We could have peace if we ignored the gang in DC and viewed every human equally to pursue our dreams freely. And yes, defend them if need be. Come on and sing the chorus with me.
A gun for everyone, a gun for everyone. Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. Yes, a gun for everyone.
What? A gun for everyone?
Listen up, son, we need a gun for everyone. A Glock for every jock, Mosin Nagant to rock the block. A firearm for every mom, and an AK for every gay, a gap for every girl, a sink for every kid. We need to arm the world, except for government.
Rolling, my worm, Ren. How you doing, worms?
Rolling.
Worms.
Doing good, man.
A worm, my worm for everyone. Ren. A worm for everyone.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love your new video, A Gun for Everyone.
Except for government.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks, man. Yeah, I probably told this origin story of it already on the cast, but...
Go ahead, now that it's out.
I did. Yeah. Well, I got a beat from our good friend Chris Calder. I think maybe one of his friends made it. Brazen Bull Beats.
Cool name.
Yeah. And so immediately when I heard it, I was like, oh, this is kind of happy and catchy. And I was freestyling to it because that's what I do when I get new beats is I freestyle to them and see if anything just fits because it's supposed to, you know. And I just started humming along, "A Gun for Everyone." And I was like, "Oh, okay, yeah, that could be the chorus." And I was like, "I'm gonna make this song one day." And then you know, I got off doing other songs and other projects. But literally one morning I woke up.
So that was before the shooting in Connecticut.
Months ago. Yeah.
He came up with the hook. Yeah.
Yeah. Months ago. And, you know, the shooting in Connecticut happened. And, you know, I guess this happens with all of these kinds of shootings is everybody uses it to politicize their own points of view that they've already held. But the gun control felt especially strong this time around, and I guess you could say that with everyone. I don't know, but I just, something in me when I woke up one morning a couple days after the horrible massacre, which I do think we should recognize the horribleness of it, but something hit me when I woke up that, you know, this song is an answer. I don't know if it's the answer, but it's an answer. It's definitely an answer to the people who would seek to take guns away from the average person, because the gun controllers always seek to make sure that the anointed classes, the cops, the military, the Fed goons, all will still have their guns. So, and I've made the point before that the essence of the argument for me is that why limit something as equalizing and as powerful as a gun to the hands of just an anointed class? I mean, that seems to me the antithesis of any kind of moral equality or any of the buzzwords that liberals will preach in other forums. So A Gun for Everyone seemed like the answer and a song I needed to make. And I made the hook and sent you a version of it. And you were like, "Brilliant, but needs more sleigh bell." Like,
yeah,
we were doing a Christopher Walken impression or something.
I said it needed sleigh bell. It needed sleigh bell. Yeah.
Needed sleigh bell.
I heard it. It was like, you know, yeah, week before Christmas, I heard it. And in my mind, I was hearing sleigh bell on the chorus.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's a really bouncy track. It kind of makes you want to, you know, move your hips back and forth. So
it's
sleigh bell,
I mean,
is kind of like,
you know,
bouncing up and down.
It could have been a Will Smith song. But Will Smith wouldn't write a song called "A Gun for Everyone." He'd write,
"Yeah,
we need to take away the guns to have peace for everyone."
Yeah, yeah. He'd make it like a T.I. song.
Yeah.
So yeah, and I was like, you know, you're right. It's almost Christmas. Let's do this. Let's make a Christmas video. It'll be our fiends gift to the world.
And then I immediately got the idea of Ben Stone. You said you were going to get a Santa hat, and I'm like, no, man, Ben Stone. Bad Quaker. He should. And I said it to him, and his wife went out and bought him a full Santa suit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which she got a great kick out of. And she filmed him. Your wife filmed you. Yep.
Yep. Yep. And it was so fun to see that fun side of Ben, too. Because, you know, he's all playing along with it, just being Santa, man. I
putting guns in kids' stockings.
Because so often I think of Ben as, you know, this. I mean, I know he's not like super serious and doesn't take himself too seriously, but a lot of times I think when I think of Ben Stone, I think of, you know, that clear logic, that almost, well, I guess it is kind of a scholarly take on things, and it was fun to see him sort of let loose and be Santa and dance around and bounce.
You know, everybody had that one professor in college that was cool that you really actually liked and learned something from.
Yeah.
And sometimes that guy would show up at the Christmas party and be the, you know, be Santa or be the the light of the party. And you're like, wow, he's really cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
So he was kind of like Bad Santa, but a better Bad Santa than Billy Bob Thornton.
I like when he pulls out the big switchblade type knife, the big knife, and opens his naughty and nice list.
The scroll. Yeah.
Yeah. I came up with the idea for the naughty and nice list, and Ben and I worked on the list, and it's the naughty list is a bunch of gun grabbers, and the nice list is a bunch of our friends.
Yeah, yeah. Kyle Bennett on Facebook was like,
Yeah, what's happening on Facebook? What's happening on Facebook?
Yeah, you want to know, don't you? So I'm going to be your third party. You're going to live through Facebook vicariously through me, huh?
Yeah, I called you Free Talk Live last night and bitched to 100,000 people nationwide about Facebook.
Yeah.
It was fun.
Yeah. Kyle was like, "Oh, I see. I'm not on the list." And I'm like, "Well, there's many lists. You can send a FOIA request to NORAD and see if you're on one of their lists."
Thank you for telling me what's happening on Facebook. Yeah, I knew somebody was going to feel bad about being left off the list. But literally, if we put everybody that should be on the list that we know on the list, it'd be about 250 people. So, and same with the gun grabbers, you know.
Yeah,
and it's the
chorus is only like 20 seconds.
It's
long.
A 2.5 minute song. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. So people should share
it. That's the answer to that. You know how people parents have to come up with answers for why does Santa do this? How does Santa get to everybody in the world? Well, that's my answer for this is there's several lists. So if you feel left out for not being on the nice list, that was just one of many.
You're on the secret nice list.
Secret nice list, yes. That's the president even better. Has in his hands.
No. Do you notice that clip of Obama crying for the dead children that he didn't get to murder? When he's wiping,
that's why he's upset. He's just jealous that somebody else got to murder kids.
When he's wiping the tear out of his eye, he's using his middle finger. He's flipping you off. Yeah. Flipping America off.
Yeah, that's why I picked that one. I was going through the footage and I was like, and that was the first one I saw, and I was like, he just used his middle finger to wipe a tear. And you know, there's probably not much behind it, but
he did that
just
in one of the debates. He scratched his eye or something with his middle finger and people made a big thing out of it. I think it's just something he did learn to be cool when he's back in the Chum Gang and it stuck.
Yeah, yeah.
Back when he was stealing weed from his roommates.
Yeah, as he did an interception, he would make sure to flip you off while he grabbed the joint.
Yeah, so I was real like last week. I was like, oh, they're going to take our guns. It's going to be horrible. I am so not like that this weekend. Yay. I had this really, really heartening experience yesterday. You know, we went through all our ammo and we noticed we're kind of short on 40, our carry ammo. So we went to a sporting goods store in Wyoming. I'm not going to say which one. It was lines out the door. Not out the door, but the store was packed at like 9 o'clock at night. And the ammo shelves were almost bare. 9 was completely gone. Reloading stuff was completely gone. 308 was completely gone. 380 was completely gone. A lot of carry cartridge. 38 was completely gone. We got the last four boxes of 40. Not that many non-cops carry 40, but we carry 40. So we got the last four boxes of 40. And we're checking. We finally get through the line, long line, checking out. And we're chatting with the 21-year-old hipster chick that's behind the counter. First of all, this was really heartening to me because she, in LA, that person would be a gun grabber. That person would be an Obama humper. She was, you know.
What, did she have like dreadlocks?
No, she just looked really hip. That's all I can say.
Okay. All right.
And, you know,
she was wearing clothes I didn't understand.
Yeah,
saying
she was
words I didn't
hip.
Know what they meant.
And I said, so, you look really busy. Is that because it's 4 days before Christmas? And she's like, no, it's because of the laws they might be passing. We can't keep anything in stock, man. And she said that the other day they got 150 ARs in and they were gone in 3 hours in a town of 50,000 people where everybody already has 6 ARs. All right.
Right. Right.
So that's like one AR a minute for 3 hours. They sold.
Wow.
More or less. And she said, Wyoming, no one's going to be able to take guns away in Wyoming. It's not going to happen. And I was like, right on. And I said, I'm really curious. Are a lot of people paying with cash this week? And she's like, yeah, I don't understand it. They usually slide their card right through here. And I'm like, you don't understand it? And she's like, no, everyone is paying in cash. I don't get it. And I'm like, it's so there's no record of it. And she's like, oh, which is kind of funny because she was like, pro-gun, anti-confiscation, but she didn't really understand the whole picture. I had to explain it to her. And then there's this other hipster couple in line behind us, a couple years older than her, but still like people in LA, they would be just gun grabbers. I could tell by looking at them. We were going out in the parking lot. They come out behind us and they go, if the president tries to take our guns, he ain't going to live very long. The girl said that. The girl said that. And I was like,
wow.
I didn't say anything.
Yeah,
I was like,
you're reporting what somebody else said.
Yeah. I didn't even react. I just kind of looked at him like, okay.
Yeah, that's totally heartening. And I feel like, you know, most of my Facebook friends, I mean, they're not going that far to say things like that. But I feel like this has only strengthened a lot of people's resolve. I don't think that it's convinced anybody that the principle of self-defense has changed at all. I mean, it's a principle, right? It's like a law of physics. And the other thing that struck me yesterday was pretty much the same thing in a different way. This happened in Connecticut, right? I mean, I feel like this goes to show the weakness and an inherent failing of a federal system in a country this big, you know, both in population, over 300 million people, and land mass. Is why should something that happened thousands of miles away from me or from you mean that the rules change for us? And it also goes to show it's the kindergarten mentality of the school, right? I mean, someone, this one person did a bad thing. Yes,
we're taking guns away from the whole class.
Right, right. Yeah. And I always thought that was unfair, even when I was a kid in school, because it happened in more than kindergarten. You know, that was like in grade school too. College. You know, yeah, that didn't happen in college, but in public school. Well, I guess I was at a public college, but yeah, in K through 12, I would remember that would happen. You know, the teacher would say, "Well, if such and such doesn't confess, then the whole class will have to do extra homework."
Confess.
We must have a confession now.
That's so square. You sound like you're in a good mood today.
Yeah, man. I guess I'm in a good mood to cat. I'm glad we're not having the central scrutinizer ruin our cast like last time.
I think we fixed our problem. Yeah.
Good.
You've been it's been kind of a bizarro world thing this past week. You've been really cranky, and I've been in a great mood. And the holidays do make a lot of people cranky, which is probably why I've seceded from Christmas long ago. Hey, did you get the present we sent you? I didn't see it in the video.
Well, we got a note saying that we have a package in the office, but I haven't had time to go to the office. So
I want you to get it today.
It's probably there.
It's Christmas decorations. You got to get it today. You got three more days to enjoy it. Cool. It's something that should have been in your video big time too.
Oh, damn it.
Can I just say what it is? It's the cast.
Or sure.
Why don't you turn your ears off and I'll say what it is.
Okay. I'll take
it. Are they off?
Okay. They're off in 3, 2, 1.
It's a shot shell Christmas lights. It's a string of Christmas lights made from shot shells. All right. Nima can come back now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm back now.
Okay. Can't listen to the cast then until after you get it. But you'll get it right after this. When this is over, you can FTP me a WAV file of Gun for Everyone to use in this cast, and then you can go down and check, is the office open?
Ah. Should be. Well, they're open on Saturday, unless they have some kind of stupid holiday hours.
Well, maybe you should, when we take a break, you should run down there or call them. Yeah,
it's already afternoon, so if they're open, they'll be open when the cast is done.
No, they probably close at 2 or 3 or something, man. I want you to do that. I want you to call when we take a break. All right.
Okay.
So what else we got moving on? Is this going to be called The End of the World for Gun Owners? Because no, I don't like that.
No.
Scratch that.
Yeah.
I think we should call it Statists. They hate us for our freedoms. I came up with that the other day.
They don't. Like or they do, don't they?
Yeah, it's funny.
Yeah, I like it a lot.
That's what, you know, people say about the Middle East. They hate us for our freedoms, which is something made up by the government that's total bullcrap.
Yeah.
That's not why they hate us. They hate us because we're over there killing their children. Or we.
Yeah.
The government is over there killing their children. Mm-hmm. But
been for decades, and also keeps them from being free by installing dictators in all their countries.
And that's the CIA doing all of that. I was reading about the history of the CIA the other day. It is incredibly scary and messed up. And you know, one of their big pet projects over the decades has been Iran. I mean, they've toppled a couple dictators there and put in their own dictators that are friendly to oil. They've thrown out democratically elected people. There's another thing that I didn't know about is something called Operation Mockingbird. Do you know about that?
Was that them overthrowing Mossadegh?
No. Well, it was used in that, but Operation Mockingbird is going back to the 50s, the CIA's attempt to infiltrate and influence mass media in America and elsewhere. And that's not a conspiracy. That's a fact. They do it. And they literally, starting in the 50s, had an unlimited budget that's like, you know, not accounted for in anything. And I wonder, like, where does that come from? I mean, there's the explanation in the movie Independence Day of like, how do you fund this area? How do you fund this place, this laboratory for where you keep the alien bodies? And they're like, well, you know those hammers that cost $800?
Well, maybe it was different back then, but I mean now, don't they get a black budget that the Fed can just print for them or the Treasury?
Yeah, I literally think it doesn't come from $800 hammers. I think it comes from inflation. You know, a dollar now is worth 4 cents in 1900 money, and probably 40 cents of that inflation went to the CIA, and the other 40% went to the rest of the government, and then the other few cents is just at natural inflation.
I remember doing a report a few years ago. It was like senior year of college in a history of journalism class, and the requirement was that you go into a library with microfiche and actually look at the old newspaper articles of a major world event. And I chose I chose media coverage of Iran up through the revolution. And during the overthrow of Mossadegh, it was almost like the CIA was writing the New York Times story, because that was the paper I was focusing on, the New York Times. And the way they portrayed the Shah and the royal family was as if he were any king of a Western European nation of antiquity or something. They called his wife the princess or the queen, and it was almost like reading something about the royal family of England.
It was a press release.
Yes, and it was like they were spirited away in their plane to get away from the mass of unwashed evil Iranians or something, and one day they will have their kingdom again. It was insane, because you know they were portraying these evil dictators, this completely undemocratic ruler, as this wondrous one of us type of persons or people. And I felt like you don't even get that nowadays, but maybe you would if the CIA installed somebody new in Iran. You know, if they do get their regime change they've been pushing for, it would switch just like that. You know, like in 1984 when East Asia becomes the enemy and Eurasia becomes the ally. I feel like people just switch and they'd be talking about the leader of Iran like he was a one of us.
Microfiche, if people don't know, is how they used to store back issues of newspapers and magazines in libraries before computers. And it was basically this like 3x5 index card size piece of photographic film that had micro versions of newspapers on them. Like one of these cards probably held, you know, half a New York Times or something. And you'd put it into this reader that would magnify it to like computer screen size. And yeah, you could read, yeah. It wasn't searchable though, the way that computers
and the reader
are.
Is like a drone cockpit. Like it's this massive thing that's yeah. like in the middle of the room.
Like yeah.
You're going to do flight simulation in it or something. Yep. It's crazy.
Yep. And some libraries still have them because nobody's digitized all those old papers yet.
Yeah. Yeah.
So do you think you go ahead.
I was going to say, I wonder if people like the New York Times even want those archives digitized.
Yeah.
They just want to forget. They want people to forget those down the memory hole style.
They want to forget that they used to have some integrity. Yeah. That newspapers used to have journalistic integrity. Maybe.
Slightly. I did not notice that. That was not the conclusion. There was no conclusion that there was any more integrity then than there is now. Maybe if there was, it was a tiny bit. But
That was the point in college that a light should have clicked in your head and said, I will eventually quit being a news anchor because this is how it works. But, you know, you weren't supposed to come to that conclusion. You probably
did.
Well,
I started having doubts. And that was the class, History of Journalism, that started giving me doubts. The professor was – he knew about American foreign policy, and he even told the whole class, you know, at one point that this is what America tends to do is soup up the media to sell a war to the people. And often under, you know, sensationalized or false pretenses. And what happens is it doesn't benefit anybody in the first place. Or I guess it does benefit some people. But he said, you know, it doesn't really benefit society at all, because the person that America installs is always a dictator. And then he gets overthrown by the people a decade or two later. So he was making the case that it's foreign policy, American foreign policy at least, is often an exercise in futility. He also had us read Edward R. Murrow's autobiography, or maybe it was a biography, I don't remember. But the point he made with that, and the point that the book made about Edward R. Murrow, was Edward R. Murrow, he tried to take on the system. You know, he had corruption he was trying to expose. I think it was with Alcoa, and they were like a main source
advertiser.
Of income, main advertiser.
NBC, right? NBC.
I think it was CBS, but I'm not sure. It was one of the big three. And in the end, the guy, because Edward R. Murrow like invented a lot of the techniques that you see. Like
he was one of the greatest journalists of all time.
Well,
there's a great movie about him. That movie about him with Downey. Have you seen that? That black and white noir kind of movie?
Yeah, Good Night and Good Luck.
That made me want a cigarette, man. Everyone's chain smoking, right. Unfiltered Pall Mall.
In front of the ribbon mics.
In front of the whole thing, in front of the ribbon mics.
Yeah. Yeah, and on air, too. But the thing that struck me then was he tried to take on something he saw as corruption, and he lost. And he had as much clout as any journalist can get. Like, he invented pretty much the format of broadcast news.
Well, he
like
did take down
live shots and picture.
He,
you know,
he took down
correspondent talking to somebody.
Yeah, he took down Senator McCarthy, though.
Yeah,
the guy who the term McCarthyism is named after, which is basically a government person or someone trying to ruin someone's life, you know, based on what they are. Well, like, literally, what the government does now openly is McCarthyistic.
Yeah.
You know, ever
yeah.
since Bush, probably.
Yeah. But in the end, Murrow lost his job because he was too honest, because he was sticking to his principles. And CBS was like, no, no, he can't. Or NBC or whoever. I don't remember who he worked for. It was one of the big three.
CBS. I looked it
CBS?
Up.
CBS? Okay. Yeah. And they let him go. They said, no, yeah. you can't do this. You're gone. You're gone.
And that's shown in that movie with Downey.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And at that moment, you know, that year, that senior year, I was like rethinking it. I was like, well, what do I do here? And that's why it took me – there was like a lull of about a year and a half after I graduated college and got my first job, because I didn't even look. I was like, well, I can use these skills for something else. You know, I worked for a production company, arts and labor, and it was – I had a good time. And then I was like, well, you know, I am going to try to do this, at least see if I can make a dent and maybe change things from the inside. I learned that that's probably not how it works. At least I didn't feel like I could make a big difference like that.
Well,
so.
With a lot of things, they don't let you come to that conclusion. They tell you, you know, like the point in seminary school right before graduation when they tell you that the Bible is not the literal word of God, or, you know, in law school, right before you graduate, they tell you that, you know, you thought you were going to be fighting wrongs, but you're probably going to be working for some big corporation, fighting people who fight wrongs. And, yeah. you know, the point where you become a 33rd level Mason and they tell you that we're really about worshiping the devil. And then you'd go join the CIA.
Yeah. Yeah. There you go.
All right. Let's go sell some things, man.
Okay.
Hi, I'm Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends, and like you, I'm concerned with privacy on the internet. The electronic police state is strangling our previous protections, and the central scrutinizer is trying to squint into all areas of our lives. That's why smart people surf the net with a VPN or virtual private network. I use a VPN from Bola VPN. Bola VPN has your utmost security in mind and will allow you to surf, email, and do other computing tasks without leaving a trail of breadcrumbs across the internet. Unlike many other VPN providers, Bola VPN doesn't log traffic. With Bola VPN, you can change your apparent location or disappear completely. Bola VPN has been around since 2007, which is OG in the VPN world. Bola VPN is easy to install and configure. Best of all, it can be had for less than 25 cents a day, which is a small price to pay for this much security. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them through the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
The Bad Quaker staff has discovered how easy it is to get everything you need for the holidays at Amazon. Everything from the coolest decorations to hangover remedies, and everything from the latest movies and music to poop stain remover. If you follow the Amazon link at badquaker.com, Amazon will give badquaker.com a tiny portion of the purchase. It won't cost you any extra, but you will be supporting this podcast. Thank you.
A science fiction comic adventure from Big Head Press. Quantum Vibe! It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. Quantum Vibe. There's a robot girl and zany creatures made with genetically engineered features, and corporate villains crave the opportunity to steal a profit from mother's ingenuity. A scientific genius and his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com.
Roland, what'd you say, Nima?
Yeah, the apartment complex office is open till 5, so I'm not going to put pants on. I'll just go there after we're done chatting.
Yeah. We were having a Skype mumble issue the last cast, and I was having it with someone else later, and it was like, it was really strange because My internet is working great. Everything's working great. Downloads fast as hell, whatever. But anything with internet telephony didn't work. And I was actually like thinking, it's the government. They don't want me to podcast. And then it just magically fixed itself. And I think the central scrutinizer heard me complaining about it and was like, oh no, he's left Facebook. Maybe he'll get frustrated and leave the internet. And then how will we spy on him and all his friends? And then they fixed it.
Yeah, they didn't want to shut themselves down too. Unintended consequence of their goon action.
Yep.
But yeah, it was probably more likely infrastructure problems because you're in Wyoming.
And it's windy. So yeah. Why do the statists hate us for our freedoms? What does that mean to you?
What it means to me?
Yeah.
Well, it just seems obvious because all they ever try to do is take away more freedom. I mean, what did Mises say that government or the state is in essence the negation of liberty?
Yeah.
And it really is. At its core, all it is a prevention of liberty. And so to be a statist at all, you make that initial leap into taking away liberty, taking away some freedoms. You make the statement that, well, in some cases, it's okay for a select group of people to control others, to make law, to basically put themselves on the pedestal of nature or nature's God and become the lawmaker for the rest of society. Once you take that leap, no matter how small you confine that government to, you've made that leap. You've crossed the Rubicon and various other cliches. So in order to be a statist, you have to hate our freedoms, or at least some of our freedoms, and that will grow, eventually encompassing all until it collapses and starts the cycle again, I guess.
Yeah. There's someone at the door. I had to see if it was...
Are we talking too much?
You're talking too loud. Yeah. No, yeah. I was talking to a friend recently who said the reason he bought guns was he had a neighbor who was insane. He said one time his neighbor banged on his door late at night and screamed at him, "You're making too much noise." And he had been literally, there was no speakers on. He was literally sitting at the computer reading the web, and his wife was sitting in a chair reading the Bible. And the neighbor was like, "You're making too much noise."
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, man, I saw a Louis C.K. episode. I guess it's just called Louis. And he's hilarious. He's like my favorite comedian. And he's got this – it's kind of like a sitcom, but it's not really the sitcom format. Like it's kind of avant-garde and interesting. And a lot – some episodes are just like depressing. Like that's sort of where his comedy comes from, is his misery. And there's a scene where he takes this girl. They're on a date and they go to this this donut shop, like after dinner, like they've just finished eating dinner. He's like, "Oh, you want to go for donuts?" And he convinces her. And this group of high school kids walk in and they're being like really loud and obnoxious. And he asks them to keep it down so other people can talk. And like this bully, like the alpha male in the group, comes up to him and starts harassing him. Is like, you know, "Hey, I just kicked somebody's ass yesterday." And he like shows his hand and his knuckles are all bloody. And he's like, do you want to ask me nicely to not kick your ass and maybe I'll listen to you?" And it goes back and forth, and eventually Louis just has to like concede. He's like, "Okay, fine, man. Yes, please don't kick my ass." And I'm thinking that would never happen with me. I would be like, "Hey, I don't fight. I'm not into violence. And if you attack me, I will defend myself, and I have a tool to do that." Or something.
Would you say that? I mean,
I don't know if I'd say it in those words, but
I think I'd walk away.
I
think I'd walk away. You know, unless like I'm there like eating, I'm not going to get up and leave probably. But
right. Well, that was the situation. Is he was sitting down with his lady friend in a booth. On his left side was the wall. On his right side was the bully. So there was no getting up and there was no walking away because he would have had to stand up and get past the bully in the first place.
Yeah, I mean, I haven't been in that situation. I don't know what I'd do. You know, if you show him you have a gun or even tell him, he might have one too. He might pull it out. There might be a gunfight. You might get shot. I don't know that that's the point to show that you have a gun, and it's probably not tactically smart, and it's probably not legally smart because A, he could just start screaming and get a cop and arrest you for brandishing. Although in Wyoming, you probably wouldn't. There's actually been a case with that since they passed Castle Doctrine here. It's the only time it's been used since they passed it. Was for someone arrested for brandishing who was actually believed they were in mortal danger.
Yeah.
So
well, I don't think I would pull the gun unless it came to that. There was that PDF you sent me a while back. I don't know if you posted it in the show notes. That was sort of how to deal with this kind of thing. And
I did. You know, I did post it.
You did. Okay. Well, I encourage people to check that out. Or maybe you could put it in the show notes for today. But, you know, there's levels of escalation. And, you know, if it comes to it, you might have to pull. But, you know, first, you know, you set up your fence with your hands. You say, hey, please, I don't want a confrontation. Please go away. You know,
I kind of like the idea of when it comes to pulling the gun, pull the gun and start screaming, I'm in fear for my life. You know, kind of like what I think I'd probably do what Derek J does, but with a gun. You know, like, I'm afraid of you. Go away. Like, I would probably sound like a sissy bitch, but waving a gun or holding a gun, right. Which actually could probably work. You know, and that's not a plan. That's how I would probably react. I know me. And actually, that would probably help you legally if something has to happen, because witnesses would hear you being in fear of your life, even if you do sound like a sissy bitch.
Right.
Not that Derek J sounds like a sissy. I like him.
That,
I love him.
That wouldn't have helped in Louis' situation, because after he submits to the guy's will and apologizes and says, please do not kick my ass, his girl's turned off. And she's like, yeah, I know intellectually I didn't want you to fight, but don't feel
well, that's
kind of
what the government – the government kind of like makes you apologize for being right.
Yeah.
I mean, literally, like what T.I. had to do. He had to go, well, he didn't have to. He stayed out of jail by going and telling kids guns are bad when he knows guns aren't bad, and he carried them. And, you know, he probably still, I'm sure he's a rich dude that a lot of people, you know, go, he probably is surrounded by guys who are armed, who have permits to carry him, that he's paying, you know, $100 an hour to be there.
Which is why you really have to look at the gun controllers and say, are you saying that you want guns to cease to exist? Because a lot of them don't. No, they allow for armed bodyguards, and they allow for police in the military, and they understand the concept of defense.
Well, that's kind of NRA 101, but it's worth saying to any new listeners who don't know that one.
It's completely worth saying.
Everybody who wants to outlaw guns, everybody who has any power to make laws to outlaw guns, is someone who is protected 24/7 by people with guns who are paid by the taxpayer.
Right. So all they really are asking for is to keep you from owning a gun. It's to make an anointed class. And that all that does is increase the gap in disparity. They want the 1% to have the guns, the 1% being the approved governmental gun carriers.
Do you know where the term draconian comes from?
Huh. I used to, but it's not recalling right now.
Draconian, if people don't know, means excessive laws, like, you know, laws where you get thrown in jail for a year for having a joint is a draconian law. Most gun laws are all gun laws except laws against shooting people with guns, which isn't a gun law, that's a murder law. All gun laws are draconian. You know, they're punishing you for something that isn't a crime. Mm-hmm. Draconian is named after Dracos, who was a Greek. This is interesting. They didn't call them lawmakers originally. They called them lawgivers.
How like, status is that?
Thanks for the gift. Thanks for the gift.
Right.
He was the first legislator of Athens in ancient Greece. He replaced the prevailing system of oral law and blood feud with a written code to be enforced only by a court. Mm. Known for its harshness, draconian has come to refer to anyone similarly unforgiving with rules or laws.
Mm, okay.
Yeah.
That's a good origin story. Thank you, Michael.
There's more. The punishment was more, let's see. The laws, however, were particularly harsh. For example, any debtor whose status was lower than that of his creditor was forced into slavery. The punishment was more lenient for those owing a debt to a member of a lower class, of course. The death penalty.
Just like today.
Yeah. The death penalty was the punishment for even minor offenses.
Wow.
Concerning the liberal use of the death penalty, he was a liberal. He liberally used the death penalty. Concerning the liberal use of the death penalty in the draconian code, Plutarch states, it was said by Dracon himself when asked why he'd fixed the punishment of death for most offenses, He answered that he considered these lesser crimes to deserve it, but he had no greater punishment for more important crimes. Yeah.
Maybe, did they like not bury them properly with proper burial rites?
Well,
something?
I would say torture and then death would be worse than death, but or robbing your family or torturing and killing your family. Although, you know, anytime the government kills somebody, they probably rob their family in some way.
Mm. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that just goes to show you the basic libertarian 101 that's what's wrong with the world is letting somebody be a lawgiver over everybody else.
You know, and that term lawgiver. I really feel that from what I hear lawmakers say, I feel like they wish they were called lawgivers.
Oh, they totally do. And that because that's what they act like. That's what they think they are. They think they have to set the tone for all of society. What they say goes.
They are doing a service for society. They really believe that. Right. I mean, I've had.
Do something.
I have had. I've had direct contact with lawmakers in Wyoming, like in my house, and sat them down in my living room. My state rep, I've sat in my living room and said, you know, I don't think that pot should be illegal, blah, 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 or, you know, and he was like, well, maybe. And then they were trying to pass this law about outlawing spice, like synthetic marijuana that only exists because pot's illegal and it's dangerous. And, you know, he was like, you know, I kind of agree, but when these little huffers end up in the hospital, we have to pay the bill for it. And I'm thinking, why do we have to pay the bill for it?
Yeah.
You know? And I sent an email to that effect to 20 other law givers in Wyoming, and like 10 of them wrote back, which is in a state this small, that happens. They actually, you know, one of the senators wrote me back, they had one congressman, two senators. One of the senators wrote me back, and you could tell it was personal. Maybe he dictated it, but I think he sat down and wrote it.
State senator or
no Wyoming's senator, delegates? Wyoming federal senators. So
was it Barrasso or what's that? What's the other one?
Enzi. I think it was Barrasso.
Ah, okay.
Which one's a doctor?
Barrasso.
Yeah, he gave me some medical opinion on it. And I don't even know why I wrote him, because it was a state law they were trying to pass, but I knew he had some influence, so I wrote to him. You know, they all wrote me back and basically wrote me some variation of, you know, I kind of can see where you're coming from, but I'm smarter than you, so we're going to do this other thing. Literally. It was a lawgiver response. Like, I am giving you this gift. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And that writing it down thing, that's an important piece of it, too. Because in the draconian thing, you said that Dracone or Dracos or whatever his name was the first to take it from the oral tradition.
And from Blood Feud. And you know, that whole thing that Ben Quaker said about, like, the state began when feuding was outlawed. Like, when you couldn't settle this yourself.
Dueling
was but, you know, Blood Feud is related to dueling. It's settling it in the streets, basically.
Stone also makes a great point about language.
Stone? Did you say Stone?
Stone, yeah.
I love that. I've never, Stone. Like, that sounds like someone famous we don't know. Well, like Stone said, Ben, the guy who's on my speed dial I had to hang up on because I'm like, Nima's got it ready to podcast now. Yes.
Yeah.
Professor Stone once stated, I read that Stone said that.
Well,
I like
in 50 years, that's what it'll be. I mean, people don't say Murray and Ludwig. They say Mises and Rothbard. So people say Stone in 50 years. and he makes the point that, you know, when you write a law down, it's so unnuanced. You're not going to be able to get either the meaning, and then people will interpret it into basically demolishing it as years pass. I mean, you can see this with the Second Amendment, which I think they made intentionally vague, and Boston Tea Party makes that point. But you sent me Cass Sunstein's article that was sort of his decoding of the Second Amendment and saying that, well, it's only for state militias and it's silly and it's just a recent trend that it's been interpreted to mean an individual right to bear arms. And, you know, my first thought was like, you know, that's the problem with having something called the Second Amendment that you base all these decisions on. It's a sentence written centuries ago. So who cares what the people who wrote it that long ago meant? And A, and B, who cares how people interpret it now? I mean, we can go to the first principle of self-defense and bypass that whole constitutional mess completely.
I picture that in 50 years when, you know, Mises Institute is a worldwide thing and it's on every corner, And the professor is up there saying, well, Stone said, I think there's going to be two kind of like irreverent screw up Beavis and Butthead types, smart Beavis and Butthead types in the back of the room, like whispering to each other, like, yeah, but Vedati and Dean said blah, 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 blah. Like making fun of the professor going, yeah, Stone may have said that, but Vedati and Dean said this.
Said, fuck you, statist. Said,
fuck you, statist. Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yep. You know, I saw this article on Yahoo Shine or something. DJ sent it to me. It was something about, it was a German study shows that people who pay more taxes are happier. Did you see that one?
I saw that one.
And it was so bizarre a world. I mean, literally, before she showed it to me, I was like, well, people who pay more taxes are generally richer, so they're probably happier. And that was the fact. But the article didn't say that. It was like some German government think tank commissioned a study and didn't correlate cause and effect. And they just came up with the conclusion they were probably looking for, which is that people who pay more taxes are happier.
Well, and they tried to equate it, or they tried to make the causation that, well, there's this happy place in your brain that when you donate to people or you give something to charity or you give a homeless guy a buck, you feel good about yourself. And that I believe that's true. I believe that's part of nature. It's a natural law in humanity to help other people. And really, you're doing it for yourself because you get that good feeling. And, you know, maybe they're right. Maybe there are people that think when they pay their taxes that they're doing good in the world. I would say that they're wrong. But maybe there are people that feel that way. But
why don't they give to private charity, man? Private charity is literally more efficient. If you take out even the moral component of guns are collected with a gun to your head. That's true too. But taxes are collected with a gun to your head. Take away that for a second. If you just want to look at cause and effect and, you know, like efficiency, private charities always do better with money. They do more good with money than government charities. And that's one of the things that they're trying to do to solve this fiscal cliff they've gotten themselves into, which is a really bizarre world thing. Cause it's like basically the left and the right have stolen money in every direction for 200 and some years. And now they're going, well, it's going to collapse. So we need to steal more, you know, we screwed up. So y'all are going to have to pay for it. And one of the things that's on the table, as they say, is, eliminating or greatly reducing the amount of money you can deduct from your taxes for charitable donations. So basically they're saying our inefficient government spending of your money isn't working, so we need to take it away from you spending it efficiently and steal more for our inefficiency.
Right.
And well, people back this shit.
Because it goes to the same point why I believe that there probably are people – there maybe is something to the idea that people who pay their taxes in Germany may get a good feeling about paying it. It's because they're so brainwashed, because they buy this crap, because they're in those Prussian model schools, because they're indoctrinated, because the media pushes this line. Well, they probably have never heard that private charities are more efficient.
I'm sure Hitler would have said the same thing if he thought to have his economists do it, and he probably did. Yeah. If you want to take some German history, go back a little bit there. Those who pay taxes are happier. I mean, that actually sounds more like 1984. It sounds like a sign that would be on every wall in 1984.
The profit motive is a good thing, and people don't get that. There's things that do sort of charitable things, like, well, I don't know if it's charity, but it provides a service to the world. Look at Half Price Books versus Goodwill. Right, me and the wife used to be a big fan of going to Goodwill, and lately the prices are really high, and we realize, that's mostly going to pay for people who couldn't get employment, and that's kind of nice. But the service is really bad, the selection is really bad.
At Goodwill?
Yeah.
Goodwill is all like the book selection at Goodwill. I've been to a lot of them around the country. I used to go to them a lot, and it's like it's basically dog-eared paperbacks that your grandmother would have had.
Right. And, you know, Goodwill, that's way better of a charity thing than the government. But even better.
Yeah, because the government would only give free books that are written by Cass Sunstein why paying taxes makes you happier.
Right. But we went to Half Price Books the other day, who I believe is for profit. You know, that's their main thing is making money. And it's just like a Barnes & Noble, but way better. The selection was awesome. They had old vinyls. They had old cassettes. Way cheaper than Goodwill for all this stuff. We did literally like 75% of our Christmas shopping in half an hour at Half Price Books. And it was amazing. And what struck me was, you know, it's the profit motive that makes it like this. It's not the idea that they're doing some good for the greater good, or any kind of vague bromide like that. It's that they want to bring people in there. They want to get people's money. So they provide that amazing service that is really, it's recycling, right? It's what the Greens want. They want things to be reused instead of recycled. And that's all Brave Book New Books is.
The Greens want you to be forced at the barrel of a gun to recycle. You know, really, in the market, which is what we're calling the free market now, in the market, recycling would probably be more widespread because somebody would figure out a way to make money off of everything and somebody would pay you for your trash.
Pay you for your trash. Yes. See, that's the key too, because there's either a government monopoly or the government cartels like waste management when it comes to that.
And literally function. Cartels. I mean, trash collection has historically in the last 100 years in America been a stronghold of organized crime in New York, in New Jersey, in Chicago. I mean, that was one of the legitimate businesses they laundered their money through and stole more money, you know, by doing it far less efficiency than the market would do it.
Yeah. But in places like Turkey, there are people, it's an economic function, you know, they're sort of a lower class, but their economic function is to dig through trash, take the things that are useful, repurpose them, sell them, basically do all the work that waste management would do. And they do it without any kind of government mandate or without any kind of subsidy, just completely black market off the books. But they keep landfills from being filled up. And they get things to be repurposed, so that they help society to lose wealth through that way that society can often lose wealth.
When I lived in San Francisco, in certain neighborhoods, when I finished drinking a soda or anything from a glass or tin can, you know, aluminum can, I would literally sometimes throw it on the ground, and it wasn't littering because literally within 5 minutes, a guy pushing a shopping cart would come pick it up.
And it was giving a nickel to a bum.
It was. And if I passed a trash can on the street when I was finishing my soda, I'd put it on top of it instead of in it because it'd make it easier for him to
grab
it.
Yeah. Because otherwise it's going to end up in a landfill. It's not going to do anybody any good.
But they outlawed that now. Yeah. I mean, literally in the market, if the market was allowed to function, you not only wouldn't have to pay for trash collection, which is bizarre to me because when I was a kid, it was included in your taxes. You know, the town came by and got your trash and it was part of your property taxes. Now you used to pay more property taxes and you have to pay $30 a month for trash collection to the city. And the city here has a monopoly on it, which is bizarre to me because in California, there were literally three different services you could hire. You had a choice of monopolies.
A choice. You know, cartel. Like the taxi service in Austin.
Yeah. And here it's literally, you know, the town is the only people that can do it. And in a market, in a pure market, that wouldn't be the case. You not only wouldn't have to pay property taxes, you know, pay rent on something you own, you wouldn't have to pay trash collection fee. Someone would pay you to collect trash. You know, they'd probably pay you $5 a month to come by and pick up your trash, and they'd probably pay you $20 a month if you separated it into bins, because you'd be saving them time, because they would probably be able to recycle pretty much everything. And as it stands now, certain things that people, you know, separate out and pick through their trash like rodents to separate out, aren't recyclable. Not everything is recyclable that they say is recyclable. Now, it wouldn't be basically it's only recyclable because there's government subsidies on it.
Right.
I believe glass is one of those things. Like the metals are recyclable at a profit, paper's recyclable at a profit, but glass is not recyclable at a profit without government intervention, but it would be in a market. So let's go sell some things.
And if it wasn't, then it doesn't need to happen like that. It would happen some other
exactly.
way.
It's like the post office. We don't need a bill to spend money on telling people why they should send mail, which is what some lawgiver proposed. All right, let's go sell some things in the market.
Yeah.
This is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends. I've been on the World Wide Web since its inception in 1994. I've tried dozens of web providers in that time. The only one that hasn't broken my heart is HostGator. HostGator has unlimited server space, unlimited throughput, and a guaranteed uptime of better than 99.9% for only $150 a year. You can pay a little less elsewhere, but you'll pull out your hair dealing with anyone else. HostGator has great service and unlimited tech support, only a phone call away, 24/7, 365. HostGator is where pros like the Fiends host, because we know how to do it right. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the HostGator affiliate link on the right sidebar to sign up today.
I'll get a little echo going here, baby. All right. Mew, 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 mew.
Ugh, I'm so sick of looking at Steve's wedding pics, and I'm all out of passive-aggressive comments. What else am I supposed to do at work all day?
Sick of stalking your ex on Facebook?
Yeah!
Are you all out of cute cats and autocorrect mishaps to lolat?
Duh!
Freedom Fiends to the rescue! The Fiends now have a blog. Read all about the latest tyranny today. Dream about lip pair. Laugh while Western civilization collapses. Just click on the cat icon to the right of freedomfiends.com. Freedom Fiends blog. Read it!
Want to contribute to Liberty but short on cash? You can help the Freedom Fiends without even spending a post-1964 dime. Download uTorrent and start seeding Fiends episodes and DVDs to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. There you'll find our Torrent RSS feed and instructions to grab past episodes and automatically download new ones, even while you're away from the computer. You'll also get special episodes of The Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo days or even weeks before regular podcast subscribers who aren't torrenting. Leave your computer on, seeding the torrents while you're at work or asleep. The more people seeding The Fiends, the more drone-proof we'll be when the boot comes down.
So my dehumidifier just came.
Oh, good. Glad for that.
To help keep my powder dry. I have some advice for people that store things, ammo. I had some steel case bullets in their little cardboard boxes. They came in a sealed plastic bag, and there was a tiny hole in the bag. And in a cool room, it sucked moisture into there, and it actually ruined, 100 rounds of bullets.
I can see that.
It rusted them. So
the steel gets cold and attracts the condensation.
And, it's weird. We've had really hot days and really cold days for this time of year, like one after the other, cycling. So yeah. I think that's what did it. Because usually our basement is incredibly dry, but a room off our basement is not incredibly dry. But, I don't have guns anymore, and I lost all my guns in a boating accident. So this is just advice based on the past. So
Yes. They're at the bottom of Boyson Reservoir.
Boyson Reservoir. Yep. So the Southern Poverty Law Center is demonizing anarcho-capitalists and voluntarists. I guess that means we've arrived.
Yeah. That's what I said when I first saw that. I was like, good.
We made
you judge
the list.
A man by their enemies. So
yeah, that's the organization that they think they're a think tank, and I guess they're being treated like one because the government is actually using their suggestions. The Homeland Security took their suggestion of naming people with Ron Paul stickers as potential threats to be pulled over and questioned and searched.
Yeah, man. They need to understand that hate speech, or that state speech, is hate speech. They're really going after hate in the world, which they're not.
And Krizzle's Buttons is now selling buttons that say "Hate state speech is hate speech," was the name of a Fiends episode. Yeah.
Yes, sure was.
So, do you want to talk about how I helped with your Santa video? I'm not like, I need credit. It's more like, we're
a
learning.
Nice story.
I don't hear my name in it. It's we're a teaching hospital, and we talk about our process. This video and the last video, like, several people have asked me, why aren't you in the video too? I'm not in this video because it's just two bearded anarchists. I like that. It's you and Ben Stone. And your beard is getting pretty beardly and manly there, man. You're looking. You kind of look like a terrorist when you don't have your sunglasses on. And when you do have your sunglasses on, you kind of look like Iranian Euro trash, which, like the son of some oil man who's the black sheep in the family, who's always in Morocco with the whores spending daddy's money or something.
I'll take that as a compliment, I guess.
Yeah. Well, from a hip-hop standpoint, everybody,
that's what you want, right?
Yeah, people always pick names of American gangsters from Chicago from the 30s or something. It's like, those guys are petty crooks compared to like Middle Eastern oil men, man. Shit.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So, how you help with the video? Well, you're like, if we had executive producer, you'd be the associate producer. I almost wanted to put that as your credit, but you credited yourself. You wrote your own credit, so I didn't want to change that. But
I think I was the executive producer. Asprod, well, associate producer is a non-credit. Associate producer is what you give to your secretary for blowing you.
Ah, really?
Literally.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
In film, okay. Yeah. There's other, you know, in 30 Rock, you know, the character that always has the different hats. One, you know, what's his name? Frank, the writer.
Oh,
he always
has
different hats with goofy sayings on him. One of them is associate producer, which is a joke because it's a meaningless title. And it's, you know, it's someone that like lets you borrow their car to go shoot a video or something, they drove you to the shoot, that they get an associate producer credit. No, executive producer in film is either, and they call associate producers ass prods. That's the derogatory abbreviation for it. No.
Okay. Okay.
I mean, so I guess you're saying you're the executive producer and I'm the associate producer. No, you're the artist and the producer and I'm the executive producer on that.
Ah, okay. Okay.
I'm bumping myself up in credit. No, just that ass prod is not a real title. It's like, you know, assistant worm wrangler. Actually, I had a friend who sold credits in his movie for donations way before, you know, online begging. And one of the credits that he gave a lot of people was worm wrangler. My friend Danny Plotnick did that.
Nice.
Yeah. No, the reason I'm not in this video or last video is my contribution really is like what serves the song and what serves the video. And what served it in this case was originally saying more sleigh bell. And then that immediately took us to it should be a Christmas song. I mean, this is something you were going to slow cook and have out in a month or two. Yeah. And it's timely with the shootings. And I was like, it's got to be timely before Christmas. And then instantly it went to Ben Stone playing Santa. You were going to play Santa. And I'm like, no, man, Ben Stone. He's the wise old man of the Liberty Mission. And and I sort of, the only musical contribution I really made, other than saying it should be a Santa thing, was the background vocals
which are really good.
Yeah, they're kind of Motown-y and they're kind of in the background, and it made it more soulful and it made it more like a pop tune. I wanted this to be really commercial because I wanted it to appeal to people that don't like hip hop.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it looks like it's done that, according to the comments I've gotten so far. Yeah,
we got one on the site too. It said, let me find it real quick here. Let's see. So what else did we do?
There were also people, it just got posted on Ron Paul forums or something like that. And
it did?
People were like, oh, isn't this the guy from the Guns N' Weed movie?
Nice.
Yes. Nice. Of course.
We didn't do that. Someone else did that. You didn't do that. You didn't build that.
I didn't do that.
I don't even know anyone on there. I think we have a Fiend fan on there, though, because somebody posted the Fiends, and it wasn't me. Oh, someone said, David from Minneapolis said, brilliant. I love seeing a happy, smiling family man rapping about how guns make us free. I would love for Santa to bring me an AK or a 20-gauge coach gun. Thanks for the mood lifter, Nima.
Yes. Nice. Which, that was my other, because I had another night where I was waking up in my half dream sleep paralysis. And
which is shown in the movie, the video. Yeah. It starts with your bad dream about gun tyranny, you know, people being rounded up throughout history at gunpoint. Actually, it starts with an image of the
That was another good contribution. Is I had the
showed
initial
me a rough cut.
Nightmare. The initial nightmare image was the Columbine shooters, and you were like, "No, have it be this." And it's that statue. It's a picture of that statue where it's the revolver and the barrel is tied in a knot.
Yeah, and my
and
reason
then following
for that
it is massacres, and so it was like, well,
where guns
gun
were
control
yeah.
leads to the state massacring people.
Yeah, and my reason for suggesting, and I gave you some other notes you didn't take, which is fine. You really like effects. You know, you like to put in any effects you can, and I'm like, yeah, it's kind of cheesy, but it kind of works. And I don't know if your influence for that is hip-hop videos or Persian wedding videos, but I know they both use a lot of more effects than they need to. But
I tried to not be cheesy with the effects, and I did change one effect that was cheesy. And I guess my thinking on the effects this time was make them wobble, like a dubstep bass line. So they kind of wobble with the beat, the effects do. None of the clips are like just one effect on the thing being static. They're all wobbling in eighth notes.
I thought it worked. But my reason for suggesting that you take off that original picture of Daryl Kleibold, whatever his name was, you know, that iconic picture of him in the library with the Mac 10, mm-hmm. Which to me, it just was really a shocking image and kind of too soon to start it with, because if people who didn't get hip hop and didn't get rock video, and I thought it would say, it would look like you were saying guns for everyone, including people like this.
Yeah.
You know,
which is not the intention of the video or the theory behind the video.
Let's see. Great new pro gun anthem from libertarian rapper Nima V on Ron Paul forums. Yeah. Yeah. I'd read the lyrics if you want to post them, but I'd never voluntarily subject myself to rap. Someone said, then someone posted lyrics and he said, nice. Thank you. Sweet. Isn't that Nima who did the same guy who did the Guns and Weed documentary? Sure is. Also, the great I Own Me video, which he posted. Yeah. So, yeah, you're
Yeah, cool.
All the sore losers who didn't get the weirdo president who wanted to legalize pot are still out there talking. That's me talking like a statist, because I hate them for their freedoms.
Yeah.
I'm a statist.
But you're not, thank God.
Yeah. There are some theories that this shooting was a false flag operation. And do you want to talk about, you got in some trouble for saying that might be possible.
I don't know if it was trouble for saying that, but I don't know. How far do you take that? And I guess it's that eternal problem of, you know, all we really know in the world is subjective. It's what we view for our own eyes. And this Butler Schaefer kind of expands on that too, that, you know, what do we really know as humans? It's all subjectively what we can intake through our brain and how our brain subjectively collates the information. And so what's really real? And that's a little bit existential. And I don't know what where I'm trying to go with that, really. But there was a video you showed me that was very creepy.
I will post it in the notes.
And there's not a lot of context with it, so it's kind of hard to take it as just complete evidence. It could be a puzzle piece, I think. And I don't know when we can get some real good reporting on this, but it's a week after it, and I mean, I don't even know.
Well, when was the Reichstag fire proved as a false flag? How long later?
I don't know. Do you know? Because I don't.
No.
Yeah. So, I guess what I'm getting at is what are you trying to say with this video?
I'm always of the same idea about conspiracy theories that Ben Quaker is, which is that a bunch of blurry pictures with red circles added over blurrier areas does not prove anything to me. Mm-hmm. I need better proof than that. So I'm not convinced, but the government would do that is my reaction in any mm-hmm. situation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's my reaction with 9/11 trutherism. It's my reaction with, excuse me. The government mind control drugs are choking me that they give me in my drinking water.
Trying to steal your precious bodily fluids.
Yes. Going back to, you know, to me, it all goes back to Operation Northwoods. The fact, not theory, fact confirmed that the CIA went to Kennedy and said, okay, here's what we want to do. We want to blow up a bunch of American schools and kill a bunch of Americans in public places and bomb them and crash planes into a building was one of the plans, and blame the Cubans. And then you can go to war with Cuba and the American public will accept it. And Kennedy said mm-hmm. no. And short time later, Kennedy died. Now that's conspiracy mm-hmm. theory that there's a connection between that and Kennedy dying. But it's fact that the CIA said, let's kill a bunch of Americans and blame it on the Cubans. So ever since that, I would believe that the government could do anything. I mean, mm-hmm. anybody who says, well, the government, I mean, they wouldn't go into a school and shoot a bunch of kids. They do that. I mean, in Vietnam, in the war, soldiers were told to go into schools and kill a bunch of kids. They do it surgically with drones. And I have a theory that I want to get on record here about drones. I think that drones are going to drone warfare is going to expand to the point where they really don't need soldiers anywhere, except maybe a few snipers here and there. But they're going to bring the troops home, and whoever's president will say, "I brought the troops home." And then he's going to park them on every fucking corner to search your bags and, you know, take your guns and mess with you.
Yeah, what was it, Barbara Boxer, who wants the National Guard to guard schools now? And
she said, jobs program, man.
Right. And basically she said, you know, this isn't a violation of posse comitatus because these National Guard troops already sometimes help with the war on drugs. you can really read that as it's not a new violation of posse comitatus.
We've gotten
it's just
away
a continuation.
With it. We got away with it, so that determines what the interpretation of the law is. Yeah.
Right. Which is kind of the same thinking behind, the Civil War settled the secession question. We killed enough people and proved that, there's no secession.
Yeah. So the Sandy Hook video, it's 30 seconds long. I'm going to post it. It's basically somebody filmed it with a camera off their TV, so it's kind of shaky, but you can definitely see what's going on in it. It's from the Situation Room, the Wolf Blitzer thing on MSNBC, CNN?
CNN.
They're pretty much
Wolf
the
Blitzer,
same.
CNN.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The CIA, WCIA. and then there's FWCIA, which is the Fox version. It's literally, okay, it's a press conference. It's 30 seconds of a press conference. It's a family member of one of the Sandy Hook victims, allegedly, in front of his house. The family's there. He's there. He's kind of a young, preppy looking, you know, 30-year-old guy, walks up to the camera to give a speech, and he's smiling and laughing and joking with the cameraman and his family until he walks up to the camera. And then he does this thing that actors do that they teach you in acting class to get into character, to play someone who's grief stricken. You hyperventilate a couple times. You go, and then he like totally changes and starts talking and says, "Hi, I'm so-and-so. I'm the brother of one of the victims." I mean, he's literally joking with family and the camera crew before it. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like they probably weren't supposed to show this, but it was live and they cut to, they didn't cut early, and you know they started too early, and it was on TV.
The producer was busy with his hand on his coffee mug instead of on
tweeting somebody and saying I'm getting to interview one of the family members right now. It looks like an actor walking up and starting to act for the cameras. I mean, really looks like that. And there's a bunch of links of check out this guy. Here's a video of him in a commercial. And then you click on that link and go to it, and the video has been taken down, or the webpage has been taken down, which could mean the guy actually is a bit actor in his real life for a job or part of a job.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. It doesn't disprove anything yet, but it's a nice, juicy puzzle piece. But yeah, that could be his day job, you know, and he lives in Connecticut and had a kid in Sandy Hook. But it is something interesting that I'd love to see somebody pursue further, but I don't feel like you can trust the reporters who are on the job for CNN. And at the same time, it's hard to trust, the alternative media too, because people like InfoWars.
They don't get all the puzzle pieces. Nobody gets all the puzzle pieces, but the mainstream media probably has access to more of the puzzle pieces. But even if the mainstream media suddenly realized and believed everything else is still true about this, but this guy was just a faker trying to like get money or something or get attention or further his acting career, they probably wouldn't report it because they made a huge faux pas.
Here's my other thing is it's really easy to settle all of this, right? I mean, you can't tell me, I guess you could tell me, but I would seriously doubt that Sandy Hook doesn't have cameras, does not have security cameras. I mean, most schools have those nowadays.
You'll get what they want you to get.
Right. And it feels like if we lived in a free society, if we lived in a society that was based on finding the truth and using the truth to inform the public or society, then you would have that video released and it wouldn't be like forced upon us. Like you wouldn't be forced to watch it in school or you know, showing it. But you could choose to watch it if you wanted and make your own conclusions and use that that information. I feel like that's important. I mean, that's what those cameras could be used for in a good way, is to show what actually happened. I mean, you review play footage if you're on a football team and see what the enemy does, what the opponent does. So why not in real life situations like this? And shouldn't there have been security cameras in the theater too? I mean, it's a movie theater.
Well, there's also other puzzle pieces with a bunch of different shootings. One is, okay, in the Sandy Hook one, and this is on YouTube too, there is aerial helicopter footage, like right after the shooting, of cops chasing someone into the woods and proning them out. And it's kind of blurry, but you can definitely see that's what's happening. And who was that? Because the shooter was dead in the school already. You know, who are they chasing and proning out? And why didn't we hear more about that? And there was a witness who was interviewed on TV really briefly on the spot who said, you know, I saw two shooters in there. The same thing happened with the Colorado shootings. And I saw this on TV live, you know, hours after it happened. They were interviewing people who were there that were still being held by police for questioning. There was some plump black lady, probably young lady, like probably, 24, 25. I remember seeing this. She was like, I was in the theater and there were two or three. She said there were two guys shooting. And it's like, that's not in the official report. And maybe that was just, you know, confusion or whatever. But she said she saw two people shooting. You know, and there's theories that in both these shootings, what happened is some team of paid goons went in there, shot everybody, got out surreptitiously, and then they had some patsy on hand to blame it on. And, you know, that's what a lot of people think happened with Lee Harvey Oswald, that he was just some commie malcontent that they'd been tracking to nail this on. And the guy in Colorado, the alleged shooter in Colorado, I saw him on TV in his court appearance about a week after. The guy looked drugged out of his brain. I mean, really, I've never seen court perp sit footage of someone looking that out of it and like absolutely drugged, in my opinion.
Well, I think it all boils down to the root for me is there's a crisis of confidence, obviously, in the state, because there shouldn't be confidence in the state, and in the state's media, the kept media, is they've lied to us so much about things that people kind of don't trust them about pretty much anything. And you know, where can you go to find unadulterated truth? And the answer is nowhere. The answer is you got to seek it for yourself. But I mean, who has time to sort through all of this? So everybody seems to take their own initial impressions and just use it to confirm their own biases. And I don't know if that's a problem that can be solved anytime soon, or really what to do about that. But I guess to me, the root is not having untransparent, you know, opaque, I guess, institutions pretty much running the world vis-a-vis the state and the state's media.
Yeah. Yeah. But wait, isn't Obama the most transparent administration ever? They released the source code of the White House website, which you can actually see by right clicking on a website and going to view source code.
Yeah, and they also torture Bradley Manning, who actually did get video of real things that happened.
Transparency. Who was actually transparent. Yeah.
Yeah, who was actually transparent. Yeah, and yeah, I watched the Collateral Murder video, or at least the most
some of it's
part
in
of
your
it.
Video. Didn't you use a little bit in A Gun for Everyone?
No, I was going to, but I
There's
didn't.
Some drone, yeah, drone, but that, drone's eye view in there.
Yeah, but that wasn't the Collateral Murder is from an attack helicopter, I think an Apache or something. It's not from a drone.
Yeah, and it's. Go on.
But I captured some of it and was going to use that when I said, you know, we need a gun for everyone except for government. At that line, I was going to have the government misusing using force aggressively vis-a-vis guns. And that was going to be one of them. It was going to be that scene in Collateral Murder when there's the guys that are cameramen holding cameras and the Apache helicopter is like, oh, those are AKs. Those are RPGs. Let's shoot them.
You know, and that's blamed on like they were misidentifying what they were holding, but they might have been like cameras. They're filming. Shoot them.
Yeah, maybe. And just watching that again, because I hadn't seen it in a couple years now, I guess. I didn't end up using the footage, but I did watch it. And I guess it's been said before, but it just reinforced, you know, what's wrong with the state is after they kill these cameramen from up high in an Apache helicopter
from God hurling bolts from the sky
with a 50 caliber machine gun, they look at the dead bodies and they're like, oh, a bunch of dead bodies, nice. Like they're proud of themselves.
And don't they also shoot someone who pulls up in a van and tries to take one of the wounded survivors away?
Yeah. In a minivan with little children in it.
Yeah.
And then one of them sort of questions it, like his conscience gets the best of him. And somebody else says, well, they shouldn't have brought their kids to a war zone.
No, the war came to their home is what it is. That's their neighborhood.
You brought the war zone to a neighborhood that had kids in it.
Yeah. And, you know, people say, I've heard like people just appalled by the idea of no, the government wouldn't do that. They wouldn't go kill American kids. And I'm like, well, they have a history of killing kids elsewhere, recent history, like last week. No, literally, there was drone strike
Like Scott Horton says, Barack Obama crying even though he kills kids every half hour on the half hour.
Yeah. And
so maybe a bit hyperbole, but the point is still valid.
You probably would have trouble finding an American soldier who's willing to go in and kill a bunch of kids in school, but maybe not an American soldier, maybe some kind of Blackwater CIA. I don't know, black organization.
Blackwater's like XO or XE.
Well, let's not say them. Just some black organization, something funded by, you know, inflation that's not on the books, that isn't accountable to anything. You know, first of all, the people that end up in that kind of thing are probably like the cream of the cream of soldiers willing to do anything. And secondly, you know, I was thinking about it. All you'd have to do is find someone who grew up poor and say, these are rich kids, man. You know, and with some people, that would probably do it.
Yeah.
And why is what I'm saying shocking?
That far because how you get promoted in the military is doing what you're told, unquestioningly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that there's a self-selection bias there, that the person who will do what they're ordered to do and do it well and efficiently without letting their humanity get in the way are the people who get those jobs. It's Forrest Gump, right? Remember that scene in Forrest Gump when he puts the gun together blindfolded really quick and the black drill sergeant is yelling at him going, Gump, why'd you put that weapon together so quickly? And he goes, because you told me to. He goes, God damn it, Gump, that's the best answer I've ever heard. I should recommend you for OCS, which is like officer training or something. Yeah. It's like, yeah, that's it. The people who get there, they're the ones who don't have the intellect or the humanity to really understand what's going on.
Well, some of them have the intellect. Some of them are intelligent. I mean, I imagine that if this was a false flag shooting, which I'm not saying it is, and it's almost too horrible for even me to consider, but if it is, let's do a thought experiment. Mm-hmm. I really don't think it's regular army they sent in there. I don't think it's someone in the current military that they just said, okay, we got a job for you. I think it's someone who has been plucked out of the military and put in some like outside the military force that is not called the military. That's, you know, probably not even
right.
It was probably a private contractor company, because that's how they would do that. Because remember, Obama said, well, he said he didn't like the idea of those because they weren't
because they violated the government's monopoly on violence.
Yeah. But you know, the government probably has their own contractors that contract to the government only that are there. I don't know. Anyway, let's go sell some things.
No, that's a good point. Let's go sell some things.
Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. Basic Handgun and Rifle with Jared Waltz.
First rule of being alive is you own yourself.
A groundbreaking approach to firearms and self-defense training. Beautifully filmed and easy to understand instructions make this one a must-have. Gun Training with the Non-Aggression Principle, Volume 1. New DVD from Michael W. Dean, available on Amazon.
Your house is your property.
Admit it. You hate shopping for Christmas. You do. It's a hassle coupled with a burden, mechanically checking off friends, relatives, and coworkers from your list. You're probably not even religious, but if you are, is buying your cousin some little made-in-China piece of plastic really celebrating the birth of your savior? This holiday season, why buy gifts for friends and relatives? Most of them are status anyway. You should send that money to the Freedom Fiends instead. The Freedom Fiends will use your money to help spread education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. If you want to help provide inoculation from indoctrination, go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post to send your money to the Fiends instead. Because buying crap for unappreciative statist relatives won't get your name on the golden floppy disk of redemption. And if you must shop for Christmas, please do it through the Freedom Fiends Amazon link over on the right side of freedomfiends.com. It won't cost you anything extra, and Amazon will save you the danger of holiday drive-by stabbings at your local mall. Amazon pretty much sells everything you can buy on this earth, except for guns and weed. But they do sell the DVD Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom, so get that for your gun-hating stoner brother or neocon gun nut dad. They'll thank you for it. That's freedomfiends.com.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. We have Freedom Fiends, Anarchy Gumbo, and two designs for Guns and Weed: The Road to Freedom. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists. It's only $6 for four buttons, including shipping. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says Buttons.
Yo.
Go. Yo.
So you were saying?
I was saying, okay, so since we were on that about the government monopoly of violence, as Barack Obama said it, and that violating that having defense contractors violates that, and, you know, private defense companies, and I want to make the point that that's not privatization, right? That doesn't really change the government's monopoly, because it's still
it's outsourcing.
Still government's money. Yeah, yeah. And that's why I also don't like this word privatization, because people call privatization, you know, when the government, instead of having government bureaucrats do a job, they have a private company do it. But often these private companies base their business model on selling services to the government. And so really, in effect, all they are is a slightly more efficient government bureaucracy with probably less benefits for the workers, but higher pay or something like that. You know, it's still the state, because the money is still ill-gotten. And the profit motive isn't a true profit motive, because they're not trying to find what the market wants and provide for the market. They're just trying to get that government money.
Yep. Libertarian Review tweeted your video.
Oh, good, good. See if we can get, what's that? Libertarian Republican, good old David Cordero. Oh,
David Cordero. That's not David Cordero. David Cordero is a good guy, man.
Yeah, Eric Dondero.
Yeah.
I
did send it to David Cordero. I'll check and see if he did
okay,
it.
Okay.
Yeah.
This evil Muslim wants to arm everybody is how Eric Dondero would post it on his.
Well,
Muslim
I could get
website.
It on his site, because he is still RSSing my libertarian punk site. I'll steal some time from the fiends at some point and
okay.
Put that on Eric Dondero's site. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Good news. okay. I kind of
that's
want to
all I use libertarianpunk.com for anymore is getting your videos on Eric Dondero's site.
Nice. There was something else hopeful in Gary North's great article today about why the gun control lobby is doomed to fail.
Yeah, I liked it.
And
it was good.
This is but the end was really great too. It was some nice redemption. And it goes back to 3D gun printing. He basically says, within a decade, it's going to be possible for people to manufacture guns inexpensively in their home, even if it took two decades. And I'll go even further than him. Even if it takes three or four decades, what's going to happen eventually is that any kind of gun ban would be impossible unless you ban 3D printing. And you can't obviously ban people from file sharing, or you can ban it all you want, but it's not going to stop them. So the gun controllers, it's just a matter of time. There's no way they win. It's impossible due to technology.
Have I talked about the unintended consequences of if they make gun laws too draconian?
I mean, before, but if you want to expand on that, yeah.
Well, It's a few things I've been reading. One is like, you know, basically if they do what a lot of liberals are saying to do, which is it should be the death penalty for owning a gun, or it should be. And I've seen a lot. There's been stuff on Twitter of like, can we start shooting NRA members now? And
yeah, how are you going to do that? What are you going to do? You're going to go get a gun? Hypocrite.
Yeah. They're all sold out. The NRA members all bought them last night. I was at the store. They're sold out. No, they want the government to do it. And basically, you know, if you make the penalty for possession of a gun like murder, you know, if you make it 20 years in prison, people are just going to commit murder. You know, people who were law abiding before, who never did anything wrong, who've been pushed too far, they're going to commit murder. Or if you make, you know, ownership of a semi-auto, you know, a normal gun like an AR, an AK with a 20 or 30 round mag, like a gun that, you know, millions of people have, if you make that 10 years in jail for owning that, people are going to say, you know, there's no reason I shouldn't make this full auto and put a silencer on it because it's the same penalty now.
Right.
I guess they could move the penalty for full auto with a silencer up to life in prison. But, you know, for old folks, there's not a lot of difference between 10 years in prison and life in prison. You know, and a lot of old folks aren't going to have a lot to live for if they do things like increase the tax on, you know, passing your stuff on to your kids. They're going to be like, man, I have nothing to lose. I'm going to go have my Second Amendment solution, which is not going to be my solution because I don't have any guns. I lost them in a boating accident. But and the ammo I bought last night was for a Christmas gift. So it's already given away to a relative in town, right. My many relatives here in Casper.
Yeah.
So that's people don't understand that the thing I don't get is why statists who hate us for our freedoms don't understand the unintended consequences of we need to make this so illegal no one will do it. How's that working with drugs? You know, I mean, smuggling a kilo of heroin from Mexico into America might as well be life in prison. I mean, it's like 25 years in prison, something like that, for that amount of drugs. People do that all day, every day. It's not stopping anyone.
It's because for some reason it makes them feel good. They have faith in the state. They think that the state could actually be successful at something like this.
Actually, making it that draconian for smuggling or producing or selling or whatever is literally what makes there be more of it. Now explain why that's true.
Makes there be more of what?
Of anything that's okay. There are more hard drugs in America now than there ever been, and the laws are for sales and distribution and manufacture are more draconian than they've ever been. There's a connection. More laws doesn't mean less drugs. More laws means more drugs because it drives the price up. If drugs were legal and you could buy them at Walmart, you know, probably not as many people would use them. And the fact that you can get literally hard drugs are literally worth more than gold. You know, an ounce of gold is $1,300. An ounce of heroin or cocaine. More than
that. An ounce of gold is like $1,700 now.
Okay. Heroin cut on the street is $100 a gram, and cocaine's about the same cut on the street. It's 30 grams. So an ounce, 28 grams, 29 grams, an ounce of hard drugs is worth $2,900, but it's actually worth two or three times that because you cut it two or three times before it gets to that level. So an ounce is worth like four or five times as much as gold. You know, coke and heroin are worth four or five times as much as gold. And that's because they're illegal.
Yeah. I don't know if we can have it both ways, though. I don't know if we can say that the government can't hinder the market and at the same time say that if the government tries to hinder the market, I kind of feel like it's more nuanced than that. I don't really know how, but you know, I don't feel like the government can have that big of an effect on people's desires. What instead they can do is, like you said, increase the profit motive or increase the kinds of people who pursue certain profits and have them be the criminal element. So when you drive something into a black market, people go into it because they have the fantasies of mass wealth. I mean, Scarface is still referenced pretty much on a daily basis
in hip-hop.
By rappers everywhere. Yeah. And it's because the guy...
And there's still like a million rappers named Scarface or some variation of it.
Yeah, because it's a story of a guy who came off the boat and immediately found a way, you know, to skirt the establishment system and instead make money in the black market. Vast, vast profits. And all he really had to do was be the most violent person.
Yeah.
In the industry.
How he got into the game, like the first deal he does goes bad and he ends up killing a bunch of people and then like shooting up the crowd as he's driving away. Yeah. And his boss, you know, the guy he's trying to impress to get into the game that he eventually kicks out of the game when he passes him by, is like, yeah, you've got what it takes, kid. I can use you.
Yeah. And the reason for that is because when something's black market, there's so much risk involved that you have to have people who can do things like that and be that violent and evil in order to get your product to market. And because of that, you can charge a higher price. And so I think that that's really what the government action does there. I think the lesson you learn from that is like you said, there's so many unintended consequences that using a law, which is in essence just violence, in essence all a law is pointing guns at people. So how hypocritical is it to say, well, we need to point guns at people to keep them from getting guns? They're just going to get guns other ways, and those other ways are going to be more violent and more detrimental to society in general.
Yeah, like look at the Gunwalker scandal, which was broken by David Kodera, the guy you accidentally confused with a bad guy recently. No, David Kodera, I mean, is a great guy. And he and Mike Vandebau broke that story. They had an insider, disgruntled friend at the ATF who leaked it to them, and they brought it out. And they're the reason it's on mainstream media now. And I sent your video to both of them yesterday. I hope one of them post it. That'd be nice. Yeah, you know, I was just thinking about like that question of like, where would the government possibly get people who would do their bidding to go in and shoot a bunch of kids in school? From the cartels, man. Those guys do that all day, every day. They machete anybody they're told to. And, you know, the government could bust some of them and say, hey, we'll let you go back to your town and operating and doing what you do if you do us this favor and you're experienced at it, you know? I'm not saying that's what happened. I'm saying it's absurd for the media and people to say that couldn't happen. And it's not absurd to consider that it could happen, because the government does this on an hourly basis in other countries with drones. And, you know, back before drones in the Vietnam War, they did it on a daily basis, or it happened. It didn't happen on a daily basis, but, you know, three or four soldiers in Vietnam would go into a Vietnamese village and go into school and shoot a bunch of kids. It happened. Right.
Well, I think the other thing here is, you know, people try to blame video games and the media and all that kind of stuff. And I think that that's a symptom of a deeper problem. I don't blame art for anything, really. But
art's a nice guy. Don't blame him for anything.
I think the reason that art exists and is popular is because America's kind of a bloodthirsty society. And I would point to, you know, history and foreign policy and, hell, even internal policy, like the genocide of American Indians, right? I mean, a lot of our society and our social identity is built on this concept of killing the other, of killing the people you don't like, and glorifying it. I mean, glorifying those servicemen over here and thanking them for fighting them over there. I hate that term, fighting them over there. Basically killing people thousands of miles away because you're worried that they may want to do you harm one day. And this kind of stuff is glorified by the media, but I don't think it's the media itself. The media is just imitating the way society feels about things and the way schools indoctrinate people to do things like glorify war and glorify the leaders of wars.
I don't think that people are violent because there are violent video games. I think there are violent video games because people are violent.
Exactly. Yeah, that's the short way of saying what I said.
I know. I listened to everything you just said, and I was like, that's what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah. That's totally what I'm saying.
Not that you shouldn't have said it the long way, but in conclusion, yeah.
There you go.
So I want to talk about raccoons and asexuals.
Better than Barbies.
For the last 10 minutes here.
Let's start with raccoons.
Okay. You know, I've said a few times, like, I think there was someone in my backyard. I heard him climbing over my fence, and I got my gun. It woke me up, and I went, and I didn't see anyone. It's a raccoon, man. We got a raccoon. We've seen him. Nice. It's a bad winter. It's a bad year here for wildlife in Wyoming. All the hunters tell me, like, they're not finding a lot, and a lot of the animals are really hungry and cold, and it was a drought year, and there wasn't a lot of food. So something that's never happened before is happening, is that a raccoon is climbing somehow up onto our windowsill in the front where we feed the squirrels. And at night and going up there, we noticed it because the cats were fascinated looking out the window at like midnight. And I looked out there and I saw this little bandity face looking at me. And I'm like, wow. And then he came back last night again. So we have a raccoon. It's awesome.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. Yep. I've seen lots of raccoons around town at night. And they're huge. They're not little. Like the ones I see here in Austin, they're
like 20 pounds, man.
They're like twice as big as your cats. They're like little bobcats.
Cats? Oh, yeah.
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 Yeah. And
and it's interesting because sometimes there's a neighborhood cat that's an indoor-outdoor cat that sometimes comes into our yard and our cats get totally freaked out. But sometimes when the raccoon is behind the pane of glass, they don't get freaked out. They're really curious. I guess they don't see it as a threat, which they should, because a raccoon is a much bigger threat to a cat than another cat.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had them be in my path while delivering pizzas before, like on my way there. And there's a narrow path and there's like three raccoons because they're digging in the trash by this little cafe.
They're the liberal. The liberals.
Navigate my way around it.
Yeah.
They're the liberals. What? I don't know about that.
They're the liberals of the animal world because they're – well, actually, no, I'm kind of kidding. But there was a joke called the – it was a joke, a satire of the Free State Project done by some people from the Free State Project. What was it called? The Moore State Project? Something like that. And it was, I can't remember what it was called, but they're, you know, the Free State Project's logo has a porcupine. On it. Mm-hmm. The All State Project or whatever had a raccoon. And their plan was to move 20,000 state-loving people to Massachusetts or to maybe to New Hampshire. I forget. But it was completely the opposite of the Free State Project's plan, and I thought it was great. Yeah. It was funny.
Yeah. Well, it's already the all-state project, right? I mean, that's what the state is. Go to D.C., go to Virginia, go to California.
Yep.
Yeah, man. And the other topic, asexuals. Why asexuals?
Because I saw an awesome movie called Asexual. And it's A in parentheses and then sexual. It's for streaming. It's available for streaming on Netflix. And it is a documentary about asexuals, which is something I've never thought about before in my life because I've always been a, you know, hump anything sexual fiend. and basically 1%, something about 1% of all people are asexual. And that doesn't mean they've never had sex. It means they have no sex drive. It doesn't even mean they get no pleasure from sex. Like a lot of these people will masturbate every couple months to just kind of like clear out the tension, you know, down there. Mm. But they
What do they think about that? That's what I'm curious about. Do they address that?
That was one of the questions in it and they didn't answer it. But there's actually like a support group for them that some guy started. I think it's asexuals.org or something. I don't know. I'll look it up and put it in the show notes. And it's in San Francisco and everybody in this movie looks like an incredible Obama humper liberal, but it's still a great movie and I really dug it. Oh, my phone's going off.
Why did you dig it so much?
Because it explains a lot about a lot of people I've met. And it explains something about me, because the thing that I didn't really think about... Hang on a sec.
Yeah. You can answer the phone. It's still time for the fiends. While you do that, I've got a friend in Finland who says he's been spinning the song Guns for Everyone Except for Government all day.
Where?
In Finland.
At a club or at his house?
I don't know. I'm assuming in his house.
Cool.
Yeah, yeah.
I stuck the phone under my bedspread, under my blankets.
You're going to forget about it later.
So asexual, yeah, I will. So Asexual, the movie, it was really interesting to me because, first of all, it was like a support group about a sexual issue that had no agenda of like laws or we must be recognized or blah, blah. It was basically just by us, for us kind of thing. It was like, you know, and a lot of people in the organization were like, I thought I was screwed up until I met these other people and talked to them. And I think that's an important thing for people to find other people who are like what they are in some particular area and not turn it into a status thing or a law thing.
Yeah.
And just hang out with people that you like that have your experience.
Yeah. And, you know, I was thinking about that along similar lines when we were talking about Dracos or Dracon, the lawgiver, is, you know – you can have that kind of a sentiment and do it morally and properly as long as you don't try to make law with it, as long as you don't use the government or the state or violence to force people into your laws. But there is room for people and like-minded people to use philosophy to think about things, to think about what would be good for society, and to try to persuade people to their ways of thinking or make logical arguments for their ways of thinking. That's great. That's what should happen. The line that's crossed that we're as anarchists espousing never be crossed is the line of aggression. So in a free society, you could still have somebody who was very famous like Barack Obama, a very clean cut, good looking, middle-aged person who was well respected to go and give a press conference and cry and talk about a massacre and talk about what society could do to prevent this. There's nothing wrong with that.
It'd be a little more believable if he wasn't killing people every day.
Exactly. And that's another good point is if there wasn't the threat of violence behind these political speeches, if a political speech was nothing more than getting on a soapbox and basically doing what we do, just saying our ideas and getting them out there in the marketplace of ideas, they would be more believable, and B, I think they'd be more effective, right? I mean, you're gonna listen to and trust somebody who's talking to you as an equal much more than you are somebody who's talking to you as a superior or somebody who's pointing a gun at you.
Which is the point of AA, which was kind of the original support group and kind of the longest running support group, at least, if not the original one. But so asexuals. So the thing that I learned from this movie was something about myself, and I'm definitely not asexual. They talked in the movie about, okay, first of all, like, one of the reasons it was helpful to people to find out this about themselves, like, some people didn't even know it. They're like, that's what I am. That, which is how I felt when I learned about libertarianism. I was like, that's what I am, you know? Which happened at like age 39, no, 40 something, for me. And in this movie, a lot of people, like, there's women who, you know, a lot of them feel romantic feelings for people, but they just, it doesn't connect to, I want to screw them. And I've met a few people like that, and I've made the same, like, I've had girls that were like romantic with me and just had no interest in sex with anybody, I found out later. And it was like, I kind of thought like, oh, you must be a lesbian. And they're like, they all said they've been accused of being lesbians. And a lot of them have romantic relationships, and one thing that's good about the support group is they can meet other people like that. A lot of them, some of them are married and sleep in the same bed and cuddle all night, but they just don't want to have sex. And it's, I don't think it's, they're not broken. It might be hormonal or something, but it's like, they seem like really normal people. I was really amazed halfway through it to see my old boss being interviewed in it, who's saying he's asexual. And he was the only one who had this experience. He's asexual, but likes S&M. He likes to be whipped by ladies, but he doesn't get a sexual thrill out of it. It's just something he likes. The thing I learned about it was like, it really reinforced to me how sex and love don't have to be connected, because a lot of these people had like multiple loving relationships that were romantic with different people. And that's a lot easier when you're asexual, if they understand it and don't feel like you're a tease. You know, you can have six or eight people you're totally in love with, and people don't get jealous the way they do with sexual relationships. So for me, it kind of made me understand how, like, I could, back when I was in a band and I could do this, and find people to do it with, or they found me, and I was sleeping with seven or eight different women a week. Not every night, like, you know, seven or eight women at a time over months. You know, it wasn't a different woman every night. It was like, I'd find six or seven or eight women and like keep each of them around for as long as I could. And it turned out into a lot of jealousy on their part and my part. But it really, like, I had romantic feelings and relationships with some of them, and some of them were just like plumbing to, you know, insert my plumbing into. And then there were other people that I had like, you know, bromances. Bromances are like non-homosexual, almost romantic relationships between men. And that's a term that's come out now, you know, like, I don't feel a romantic connection with you, but I feel more of a connection with you than I do with most men, and no homo.
No homo.
Yeah. But I have had men that I have had almost romantic relationships with that I had no sexual desire for. I don't know. It just kind of gave me some clarity. And now that I'm married for 7 years, We don't screw like we did when we first were dating, but we still screw probably more than most people our age, you know, several times a week. And I don't need the little blue pills, but it's like most of the real enjoyment. I mean, I enjoy that, but it's like, that's not what the marriage is. For me, the marriage is we love being in the same room together, and it's romantic and it's friendship. But it just really kind of put something into my mind, a perspective on myself. And it was weird that it came through a documentary about asexuals.
Yeah, yeah. Huh. Yeah, I guess you kind of know that in the back of your head, but it's just not something that at least I ever really think of. There's a theory of different love languages, and I've always equated, you know, my love language is being physical, whether that's sex or
mine
or
was when I was younger. Mine was when I was younger, and it's weird because a lot of people have that when they're younger, and then when they get older, barely have sex and come to the conclusion I've had. But I still have, you know, a good bit of sex, but not like I did when I was younger. But I guess what it is it's kind of like with my wife, I kind of can separate it now, and it actually just gave me clarity and made me more loving for her somehow. Of like, okay, there's the plumbing part of it, and then there's just there's no one I'd rather be spending this 4-day weekend in a room with. You know, we don't have any plans. We're not going to parties. We're not going out. We went to Red Lobster and then the gun store. That was our date. That was our and then we went and looked at Christmas lights.
Yeah, yeah, and that's a beautiful thing, and those are the kinds of things that we should be showing and talking about, especially as sort of ambassadors for anarchy and libertarianism, is the happiness that can come from knowing that, from voluntarily engaging in sharing yourself, whether sexually, intellectually, or just through company. And I feel like in the video, A Gun for Everyone, that's why the end was me with everybody in my family, you know, our fur kids, the dog, the cat, and my wife dancing together. And I was going to end it with, you know, me going back to sleep and cuddling the Mosin and being like, oh, I love my guns again and the nightmare's over. But I ended it with, you know, this spontaneous moment of me just kissing my wife after shooting
touching.
That shot.
DJ was like, oh.
Yeah, and it looked touching to me, and we didn't plan it that way. It's not like, oh, okay, and then after this, I'll kiss you as stage direction. I must kiss stage
left.
No,
it just happened.
It just happened. And you know, there are horrible things that can just happen and be spontaneous in the world, but there's also amazing, loving.
Don't shoot people. Kiss people.
Kiss people.
I mean, that sounds really hippie, but that's my feeling.
Yeah. Well, I saw a bumper sticker the other day that said, make love, not law.
No, it said make love, not law review. And I had to have DJ explain to me what law review is. And that's actually a law student's car. That's a law. It's a law school that has that. And law review is what the person does. It's basically a joke. It's like saying, I'd rather be fucking than studying. That's what it is. But
well, I'm just going to chop it off and edit it.
I already did it. Well, I've already got the picture edited.
I'll send
it to you. It says, make love, not law. It's going to be great for this episode. I'll use it.
Okay.
So in closing, and that was a beautiful ending. I should have just left it there, but there's something else I want to say about this movie, which is awesome. This group, the Asexuals of America, whatever they're called, marched in the San Francisco Gay Pride Parade and were handing out literature. And the uber-sexual, macho San Francisco gays hated them. They didn't get it. They thought they were a religious group saying, you should be asexual. Uh-huh. And a lot of people confuse asexuality with celibacy. Big difference. A lot of asexuals have had a lot of sex in their life and just decide they don't like it. You know, why am I sitting here staring at the ceiling doing math? You know, and most people who are celibate for some period of time think about sex nonstop. So it's not the same. And the asexual organization in this were definitely not trying to get people to be asexual. They were it's like Redheads of America. You know, they're not trying to get people to be redheaded. They're just supporting each other in it and explaining we are here. Mm-hmm. And it was really bizarre, man. Some of the dykes they went up to were like, get away from me, man. I want 20 feet between me and you. I mean, it was, and one of them was like, you're harshing my buzz, man. Go away. It was really funny. It was sad, but it was funny.
Yeah, that is sad. Yeah. I like the other ending better. It was more hopeful.
I could edit it and change the order.
No, it's okay. It's okay.
All right. Well, cool, man. Wormrin, and it's been wonderful. Wormrin. All right. Yes.
Wormin's lib.
You're my Wormrin. Yeah, Wormrin's lib. All right, man. Worms.
Peace.
Peace.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations and we put them back into our Liberty projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and Anarchy Gumbo and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Hello, Freedom Fiends. It's your boy, Dean, from the U.S. Get the U.S. out my bloodstream. I owe me, and that includes endorphins. No one won't ask permission, and I won't say please. Freedom fans, one fact that I gotta make clear.
The Freedom Fiends podcast is covered by a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license. Do what you want with it and spread it around. Tell two friends. Make copies. Email it to everyone you know. Go on the site and comment. This is a conversation. Three times a week, Michael W. Dean and Nima Vedati share their own unique take on the way the world works and how to find your place in it. Available from freedomfiends.com. That's freedomfiends.com.
Freedom Fiends is proudly syndicated by Alterati.com and the Liberty Radio Network.
Subscribe and tell two friends.
And remember, the only power they have is the power you allow them. We're not saying the Freedom Fiends are the one true path to anarchist liberation, but it's a good one. If you want to put your voluntarist money where your mouth is, consider making a donation to the Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post. Then make a one-time gift via PayPal or set up a monthly contribution of as little as $3. Giving to the Freedom Fiends helps advance education of horizontal liberation throughout the world. The Freedom Fiends. We work hard, so send us some money.